Let's do it.
Okay, hi everybody. I'd like to welcome everybody. This is the San Luis Obispo County's Flood Control and Water Conservation District Zone 3 Advisory Committee meeting of September 20th, 2018. And Ms. Montez, if you can call the roll.
Member Lee.
Here.
Member Ikeda.
Here.
Chairman Gehring.
Here.
Vice Chair Barnage.
Here.
Member Gibson.
Here.
Member Hageman.
Here.
And Member Guthrie.
Here.
All right. Anybody want to make any public comments? We could see if anybody on the committee wants to, and also then the audience.
Well, I would like to introduce the Public Works Department's new director, Colt Essenwine. Colt joined us in April of this year, and I think he has a few words to say.
Sure,
maybe. Welcome, Colt.
I guess I have a very attentive audience, too. That's good. My name is Colt Essenwine, new Public Works Director for San Luis Obispo County since April 23rd. So I've been here for almost 5 months. Glad to be here. Before here, I was at Santa Cruz County, and I was working as an assistant director over all things water and utilities and landfills. So did quite a bit of that. And before then, Stanislaus County. Before that, the city of Stockton through the bankruptcy. And before that, the Navy, both as a civilian and enlisted as a nuclear sub reactor operator. Welcome, Jeremy. through that, I learned to value things like integrity and teamwork, and it's about doing the right thing and taking care of each other. And so here I am, and I'm glad to be a member of the community and working with the different advisory committees and CSDs and GSDs and the local agencies. There's a lot of them. So, hi.
Hi.
So, any questions for Colt before he leaves the stand?
I'll still be here. Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
So, looking for any other public comments. We have a new committee member, Shirley Gibson.
Correct.
And you're from Oceano?
Oceano Services Community District.
All right. Good. Welcome.
Thanks.
Anybody else on the committee? Anything? Okay. Approval of the minutes from July 19th.
Yes. Mr. Chair, before we motion approval, I did want to point out that John King was the alternate. He sat in place of Brad at the July 19th meeting. And he, on the minutes, is referenced as being part of the Avila Beach Community Services District, which is incorrect. He was actually here representing County Service Area 12. So I'd like to point that out.
Yeah. For many years, we had a guy by the name of Marshall Ellis on the committee, and he was the board chairman of Avila Beach, and he always said he was representing Avila, but he was always actually representing CSA 12. So what else? Anybody else got anything?
Nope, I would move for approval.
I would second as amended, if that works.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay.
All right, we got a motion and a second. And I guess we'll go all in favor.
Aye.
Aye.
And I'm going to abstain because I wasn't here.
And I will abstain as well.
Oh, I wasn't here either, actually. But I mean, I don't usually.
You can still vote.
I can still vote. Okay.
I think Marcia and I were the only two that were actually here, and that doesn't constitute a quorum.
Okay.
In that case, I vote yes.
So if you don't withdraw, you can.
Nope, I'm standing.
Okay, yeah. Sounds like it passed.
Okay.
All right, I think we're ready for the operations report.
Okay, I'll start off with the daily operations report that I received for today, and then Jill will follow up with the monthly operations report. The lake elevation as of today is 483.66 feet. The storage is 21,501 acre feet. We're at 44% capacity. The rainfall to date is 0 inches, and that would be since July 1st of this year. Plant production is 5 million gallons per day. State water is 0.7 million gallons per day, and the downstream release is 4 million gallons per day.
Any And we have Jill Ogren.
Good evening. Jill Ogren, Public Works, Utilities Division. Let's see. So why don't we look at the projected reservoir levels? That is your chart that's got multicolored lines on it. Right now, you can see that on September 1st, our projected rainfall was to be 0.32. We did not get that rainfall, obviously. So you can see that the solid green line, which is actual storage, is dipping below what our projected storage is supposed to be. And on top of that, agency usage, so our projections are based on like historical averages. So any time that the usage is higher or lower than the historical, that also can cause a deviation in the line. So at the moment, our orange line or our green line is a little bit below the orange for two factors, one being no rainfall and the other being a little bit more usage than historically we would have used in these months. And as you can see also, I like to point this out, the dashed blue line is our 20,000 acre foot mark, and the reason we put that on there is because that is one of the triggers for us to enter into the low reservoir response plan. So if you were to say that we continue to use water in the same way we are right now and we did not get any rainfall, it's likely we could hit that 20,000 mark sometime in November or December. Any questions regarding that, the chart?
Just a quick logistical question.
Yes.
So if the 0.32 arrives on 9/1, does that mean we should have had that much rain in August?
No, that would be the rainfall for September.
So you're, even though we're in
September. You're middle way through September, and right.
And still,
it's
obviously,
possible.
Obviously, there's no rain, so we technically could get to 0.32, but with
yes,
no rain.
Yes, between now and the 30th, yes.
But it basically front loads it all to the first of the month. Okay, thank you.
So, Jill, this orange line on our chart stays above the blue dashed line off the page. But what you're saying is if that is taking in these estimated projected rainfalls.
Correct.
If we don't get any rainfall, you don't, the line is going to hit in
November, December, yeah.
Okay.
Any other committee questions?
Related to the storage chart? Yes.
On. Okay, now it's on. Thought it was on. The evaporation rate, when discussed it, I think about a year ago, and it's based on old models, weather models. It's been hotter. We've had longer, you know, warmer periods of time. Do you think that would play into the lower levels than anticipated, and do you think that if we continue to have warmer than usual weather for extended periods of time, that that will hit that 20,000 acre foot yield faster than
the projected storage, the orange line, does take into account historical evaporation, so it that is a factor, but yeah, it could be a factor. I want to say Jim actually knows this better than I do, what the average evaporation is on the lake. It can be, you know, hundreds of acre feet every month. So, I mean, that could weigh into it some
degree.
Yeah,
I guess my point is that when they do the projection, it's based on old evaporation rates, based on old weather patterns. And our weather patterns in the last, I would say, 6 to 7 years have changed dramatically. So I don't know if that's a factor or not, but I was wondering if the county considered.
Yes, we did. Okay. So we have all the historical data, but that's all we have to work from.
Right.
So we went back and said in years or months where we had X amount of rainfall, what did that look like in terms of how much evaporation did we have? What was the how much inflow did we get as a result of that? That
yeah,
was all,
I understand that. Yeah.
You know, all that was taken into the projection, but, right, it's only based on historical.
Got it.
what we've known so far. Okay.
So any other questions for Mrs. Ogren? How about from the audience? Anybody got any questions? Are we done with that segment?
Yes. Okay. I would like to move on to the next one, which is our monthly operations report, which should be the next sheet in your package. And nothing really spectacular to point out here except probably the best indicator of what's going on is to look over in the far right column where it says total water deliveries this month. You can see that in July we used a total of 521 acre-feet of water, and that does represent usage state water as well. So this is overall usage, and that in the month of August we used about the same, about 514. Nobody is currently using any of their surplus water, so per the contracts, everyone's currently just in using entitlement. I wouldn't expect us to hit surplus, people using surplus, till maybe January, something like that. Any questions on monthly deliveries? That's all I have on those two topics.
So does that conclude your report?
This concludes my report on projected reservoir levels and July and August monthly operations report.
Okay. And are you up again for information items? Oh, that's Andrea. Well, before we move on briefly, on the subject of lake evaporation, the committee members should probably keep in mind that evaporation is related to surface area. So as the lake shrinks and expands, that causes the evaporation rate to vary considerably. But also, as Member Guthrie's noted, when it's hotter, it evaporates more quickly also. So it's quite a variable. But as I recall, the evaporation rates that were tied into the projections are evaporation rates that we experienced during the warmer, drier years that have happened recently. Yeah. Okay, thank you. So, Ms. Montez, I think you're up.
Yes, I'll present the climate update. So at this point in the meeting, I usually present a climate update based on the U.S. Drought Monitor and NOAA. And we're going to take a look at the drought conditions for this month compared to that of last month, or last meeting in July, I should say. So it looks like everything remains status quo for our county as far as drought conditions go since March of this year. So we have a combination of abnormally dry, moderate drought, and severe drought conditions. And you'll see the further south we go within our county, the more severe the drought conditions are. And I also noticed that things look like they're pretty much the same for the state since July, but it also looks like up north, the abnormally dry conditions have expanded. So as far as the temperature forecast goes, for our area and for the state of California, we have about a 70 to 80% chance of above average temperatures for this time of year, pretty similar to the same conditions we had in July. And then for September, as far as the rain forecast goes, it's pretty much as I usually report at these meetings, it's an equal chance of average, below average, and above average chances of rain. Except this time we don't even have any letters within California. We don't have the EC there. So looks like we're not going to be getting any rain anytime soon. Any questions regarding my climate update? No? Members of the public? Okay. Thank you. That concludes my update.
Spillways, I suppose that's Ms. Sogren.
All right. So I'm going to provide you, it's a very brief, but I have a little update on the Lopez spillway assessment. So we have made a little bit of progress since I brought this to you in July. We've now awarded the contract to GEI Consultants. They began their assessment, their physical assessment of the spillway in August. And that will continue through January 2019 in accordance with the approved Division of Safety of Dams work plan. So we've had them out there. They've been using ropes, climbing all over the spillway, checking things. So at this point, we're kind of in wait and see as they finish their assessment and prepare their report. And that's all I have to report on that. Anybody have any questions?
Any committee members? So, Jill, I just want to make sure that that old report by Bengal Engineering that says the spillway bridge is at risk was provided to them?
Yes. Okay. They have everything that we have, any kind of information. So.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That is something. Now, Mark Hutchinson mentioned a while back that our dam was in relatively very good shape. Is that still the case after their assessment?
We don't have enough information at this point. They're just getting started. They're just doing physical measurements, and you know there's a lot more to be done out there before they can even hazard that.
Okay.
I could point as an anecdote, something just to kind of think in the back of your minds. I went to, at the Monterey County Water Resources meeting, I listened in on one of their meetings, and they had an assessment done of one of their spillways there, and they sent the report into DSOD, and they knew that there were some things they needed to do to fix the spillway, but DSOD came back to them and said, no, you need to take out the entire spillway. So, you know, I do feel confident because our repairs we've done were back in 2000. As you know, we did a lot, and we had reports to base it on. I'm not concerned about that, but I just thought I would point out that even if the consultant comes back and says, you know, it's minor, you don't need to do anything, it looks like, you know, DSOD has the right to kind of make a final decision on that. So,
and if I can kind of add to that, did they give any reason why they would go from a significant report to remove the entire spillway?
No, that kind of detail wasn't provided in the meeting.
Thanks.
So,
any other questions? Anybody from the audience? Okay, Jill, thanks for that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Were you going to gear up for the low reservoir response plan?
Yes. So you may be aware that after we left the LRP back in March 31st, at the beginning of this water year, we were no longer operating under the low reservoir response plan. At that time, the TAC decided that they wanted to pursue making some revisions to the low reservoir response plan, things kind of that we felt didn't work all that well in the last time while we were under the last LRRP. So we developed some revisions utilizing a consultant. At this point, we have a final draft of proposed revisions to the LRRP, and the TAC has reviewed them, and they're in general agreement with these revisions. I've had our county council review the draft of the low reservoir response plan revisions, and they've stated that it will require a water supply contract amendment because the changes that we felt were best to make to it are substantial enough that it would require a contract amendment. As a result, we're now going to be discussing with TAC how this amendment would work with other amendments to the contract that are under consideration by the group. So for many years, there have been little things in the contract that we've wished, you know, certain agencies would like to change. So now that we're doing a contract amendment, we could potentially need to do a contract amendment to revise and put a different kind of LRRP in place. Begs looking at these other items. So that's where we're at right now, is we're discussing with TAC how does this work with the other amendments to the contract that we're considering. But meanwhile, we still have our previous LRP in place, and that can be enacted when the reservoir reaches 20,000 acre feet and when the Board of Supervisors declares a local emergency. So those are still the two triggers. That would not have changed even under the new proposed revisions. And as noted on the reservoir projections chart, if no rain were to occur, we could hit the 20,000 acre foot mark in November or December. So at next month's TAC meeting, that will be the focus of our discussion, is how do we move on? And hopefully we'll have some better understanding of what the rainfall is going to look like, and we can make some, hopefully a more educated decision on this based on what we think the rainfall will be. So any questions on that?
I just have a quick one. So the TAC has reviewed the suggested revisions, and they're more or less okay with the revisions, just trying to figure out what else do we incorporate into that.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes, definitely.
Thank you.
Yeah. I have several questions and comments. Should I do that now or wait till we get down to the future agenda items?
Now would be appropriate. The future agenda items are items that, even though we talk about them every month, we might need to keep talking about them every month. So we're talking about it today, and we might talk about it next month. So this is fine.
Okay, I'll have to refer to my notes. I've got quite a few. So amending the LRRP is being discussed by TAC to address the water that was in storage but lost after the drought was over. One point is that Zone 3 member agencies saved a lot of water during the drought, and then we lost it soon afterwards once the drought was over. I think what happened was not as everyone envisioned, or at least as far as Oceano envisioned, but instead the outcome resulted in the County Council taking a real conservative approach on interpreting the LRRP once the drought was over. So do you understand me so far?
Mm-hmm.
So now we've learned that County Council is requiring a contract amendment to revise the LRRP. So this is basically new information for Oceano, mm-hmm. and was not required on the original. So what is, and you said there's substantial changes.
Mm-hmm.
What are those changes that County Council took this new position?
Well, I'll try to make this, it's a little complex without going into everything that we changed on there, but I can hit on some of the high points. One of the things is that under the existing LRRP, we used entitlement. At the beginning of every year, everybody got a chunk of water, and they were able to manage that, and any water they saved, they were able to hold on to as well. Under the new LRRP, there is no entitlement. What you get is whatever water you have at the time that we go into the LRRP, and from that point on, you begin to, you can store water. And any inflow that comes into the reservoir is divvied up between each of the agencies. That's how they get additional water. No additional water is given to you on April 1st. So that's a substantial change from entitlement to more of a storage model for the LRP. The other thing that changed is we added that we would exit the LRP 31,000 acre feet. That's what's proposed. That's substantially different. At the moment, when we leave 20,000 acre, when we get above 20,000 acre feet, and the Board of Supervisors rescinds the emergency declaration, mm-hmm. we just leave the LRP. Whatever water you may have stored and saved goes away. Having that trigger be at 31,000. Allows people to use water for a longer period of time. And even when it ends, under the proposed revision, everybody would get to have 10% of whatever water they saved and be able to use it for an entire year. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of instead of losing everything, which is what happened in this last one, which you mentioned,
correct.
Now they Now you get a certain amount to use for another year after you exit. So some of these are big changes, and the reason is that in the contract provisions, it says specific things about entitlement. And when you change from an entitlement to storage, or it makes it's like you're trying to change the contract without changing the contract. That's why our county council is like, if you're going to change it this much, you need a contract amendment. That's their approach. That's their feeling. It also, I think it has an effect somewhat on the environmental document that would need to be drafted.
Okay.
So.
So I have discussed this with our general manager, mm-hmm. and so we are planning on putting that on our agenda in October. And so, you know, at this point as director, you know, I won't be able to take any action on this until it has been discussed by our board.
Understood. Yeah, this is more informational at this point because, as I mentioned, we'll be talking about this again in October at TAC yeah. to figure out which way to go.
Right.
Because we're getting close to possibly entering the LRRP again. May be difficult to get all this ironed out in that time. We may have to go use the existing LRP as is.
Okay.
So.
Okay,
yes.
That helps. That's a start for us then. Thank you.
Yes. Any other questions?
Actually, I do have one question after what Ms. Gibson said. So mm-hmm. has her appointment already gone to the board for approval?
Yes, I went this past Tuesday, the 18th.
Great. Okay, sorry, I hadn't been paying attention to that.
She's
so great.
Official.
Wonderful. Good. Okay, second question I have is, when was the last time the reservoir was at 31,000?
Well, it is not. That's a good question. I don't know that offhand. I know that we have not gotten there yet. So if that's a good question. So, like, if we were operating under this new revised LRP, in theory, we would still be under it.
Right.
And that was part of the reason for proposing these changes is so that we're not going into the LRP, out of the LRP, in and out. So we have hovered between 20 and, I know it, maybe 30, probably closer to 29 for the last year and a half. So it's something to consider.
Okay. So and next question becomes, what's the likelihood that if we hit, or if the reservoir hits 20,000 sometime in November or December, that the board actually takes the action to declare an emergency in South County?
I couldn't tell you. Okay. We've not gone about it yet. We've never experienced where we've gone to them for what I would call a local emergency, you know, because for some reason this particular area didn't recover from the 2017 rains the way the other watersheds did. So it is sort of like a local emergency. I really couldn't tell you.
Okay. So, but if there
but
is,
we would have to go to the board.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And if there is a need to probably have the Zone 3 make the recommendation in advance of that, I would anticipate this to be the most productive use of that recommendation. And then last question becomes, what is the plan to bring the amendments back before either the Zone 3 committees or each of the member jurisdictions? Because obviously the member jurisdictions, as Ms. Gibson said, are going to need to make approval of those before it goes to the board.
Right. The scope of the amendments is what's going to drive how soon we can bring this back. If we do one amendment, which is the LRP, all by itself, that can happen quicker than maybe other amendments that we've been considering to the contracts. If we do all of them, it may take longer. I couldn't tell you right now exactly. We're just kind of realizing that we need to think about making other changes or not, and that's what the TAC will decide, or at least give a recommendation on how to proceed.
Okay. Thank you.
Brad.
So it sounds like County Council has offered their opinion since the last TAC meeting on this, or since the workshop that the TAC had.
Correct.
A couple, three weeks ago.
Yeah, I found out in the end of August, and when we met with TAC on September 10th, something like that, last week, that's when I presented it to them. So that was their first time that everyone at TAC heard that our County Council is recommending a contract amendment. So, which is why Shirley was mentioning that this is new news,
yeah.
And so that's why we're going to discuss it again in October, because it does change things for some.
Procedurally, significantly, I guess you would say, as Jeff was pointing out, since now each entity has to approve an amendment.
Right. So whether we approve one amendment or we approve multiple amendments to the contract, it does need to go to each of your governing boards.
Oh, so yeah, I guess also mm-hmm. with revisions to the LRP, same would have applied, I guess.
Right, right. No matter what, because a contract amendment has to go to all agencies
right.
by your
okay.
boards for approval, and then ultimately by the Board of Supervisors.
Back to the SUPs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
So with regard to the existing LRP, the awkwardness seemed to arise as we got to a point where we were going to exit. And the new changes are designed to help smooth that process. So I'm thinking that even though this is a significant delay, the TAC's going to have to get its act together and get back to us quickly. And there's no reason, perhaps, why we couldn't enact an amended a contract amendment which would provide a new LRP in mid-existing LRP. I wouldn't think. I think we could do that probably if we had to. So perhaps it won't be a great inconvenience, but we need to get going.
Yeah, I guess from a timing standpoint, though, I mean, if we're going to hit 20,000 in November, we're not going to meet until November again. Mm-hmm. And so short of either an emergency action to have us request an emergency declaration by the board. So we could be below 20,000 acre feet before we meet again.
Mm-hmm.
We went to the board
yes.
in the last one to ask for an extension solely applicable to Zone 3, and they'd granted that, as I recall. So I wouldn't foresee a reason they wouldn't respond to us favorably
right.
if we had good reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's possible that by the time we go to the board and they declare the emergency, we would be below the 20,000. But I'm trying to remember, I think that might have been even the situation back in December 2014.
I also seem to recall that just we as a agency said maybe it's not declared, but are we going to function as if we're in it, but even prior to that? I mean, I think that was one of the discussions is we wanted to kind of act as if we were there under the auspices of it's better to conserve water and move in that direction from an operational standpoint at the jurisdictions while those paperwork was being addressed.
Right.
Am
so,
I remembering that
so the main,
correctly?
Right. So the main thing that happens when we hit the 20,000 acre feet is that ag releases are reduced from 4,200 down to 3,800. That's the first thing that happens. When you get down to the next level, the next trigger, 10,000 or 15, I think it's 15,000, then the municipalities take a 10% reduction in their entitlements. So it's even if we were below the 20,000, the agencies are still intact in terms of your supply. We did last time proactively reduce entitlements by 10% well before we got to the 15,000. And that could happen again if that's what everyone chose to do.
I know one thing that we're keeping our eye on is the permanent right to store water in the reservoir. So with this new model changing from entitlement to storage, how do you think that affects
the
storing water?
Oh, state water?
Yeah. Well, I don't know whether it's state or just in general.
What was your previous? I'm sorry, I didn't hear the first part of your question.
Yeah, one thing we're keeping our eye on is the permanent right to store water in the reservoir.
Right. And that's what a storage model does.
Okay,
it does. It gives you the storage model, which is the way we're leaning, and there can be different versions of storage model. There's the pure model, which everybody gets a slice of the reservoir,
okay.
And then there's all kinds of variations somewhere in and around there, which you know, maybe everybody gets some storage, some maximum amount of storage. So there's different ways to do a storage model. But in either event, if you move in that direction towards a storage model, everybody will have some amount of permanent storage. And it could have a maximum, it could not, it could, there's just different ways to do it. And that's some of what we need to work through.
Okay.
If we look at the bigger picture in the way we want to change our contracts and do some other amendments, move closer to a storage model, move to a pure storage model, a lot of different things to consider.
Okay. Thank you.
So the updated draft unapproved LRRP envisions
yes.
a storage model for all the agencies, but only during the time that the LRRP as updated and drafted and not yet approved is in effect. Mm-hmm. So to enact a storage model during times when the LRRP would not be in effect, we'd have to have additional contract amendments.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Well, to kind of muddy the waters further, but if you move to a storage model, you actually don't need the LRRP. You might need some recommended reductions, you know, for in a drought, but you don't need the level that we have because everybody would be able to manage their own water. We would not give you water on a certain day. You will get whatever some percentage of inflow that happens when it rains, whatever that is, and we know that number every day. That would be divvied up to everybody and taking into account evaporation, et cetera. So everybody would have the ability to manage their own water. So you don't really need to tell people how to do it because you will know, every agency would know what's in their water bank account.
So do you envision that, Jill? There being no LRRP because it's really hard to say?
It depends on where we go with this, the contract changes, to be honest. Under a very pure model of a storage, I would say yes, we won't need an LRRP. Some other version where you get some storage, but not all of it, and there's some maximums and minimums or whatever, you know, ends up being the thing that everyone can agree on, you might need some version of the LRP, something. I think they call it a water shortage contingency plan, and I think we've talked about even changing the name of our LRRP to something that fits more in line with the urban water management plan. And so maybe that would still be a part of the contract. You know, what do you do when things get low?
Yeah, because I can see that affecting the agricultural in the downstream releases, if kind of having triggers, whether it's not an LRRP or some other name,
mm-hmm.
it's all when we get to certain levels, there's going to need to be a discussion because all the agencies will know what water is theirs, but the agricultural impacts and the downstream impacts would depend upon how much remaining water is there.
Well, actually, that's another nuance to a storage model. You can give, if everybody agrees, anybody. You can give storage to each agency. You could give storage to downstream releases. You could give storage to state water. You could. There's many options. There's a lot of different ways to accommodate all this in a storage model. So where, you know, what that actually looks like is what we'll be working through with the TAC. We've explored and we've modeled a pure storage model where everybody got something. And we've also explored everybody getting something and downstream releases getting something. We've done all that modeling so that people can see what happens to their bank account when you do this. But again, that's just one bookend, right? And then there's like the contract that we have right now, and then we have a pure storage model, which is another bookend, and then there's something in between, some hybrid, something that maybe works better for everyone.
Yeah, I will say that going to the TAC meetings, that everybody's been, the group has worked hard, and it's very confusing. Mm-hmm. But they've all been taken into account the downstream releases in ag. Everybody's been very cognizant, have been really good about not forgetting ag, I should say. So So I want to, you know, thank everybody for that. But I do think that this, there's also downstream releases. It's not just ag either. There's the environmental factor. So
yes,
there's, I think there's going to be downstream releases. Would mandated be the right word? Is that
possibly? I don't. Well, a negotiated amount. Let's put it that. I would call it on a negotiated amount.
Okay.
But yes, and that's kind of why we call them just downstream releases. We don't designate it's, you know, environmental versus ag. They're just downstream releases at this point. So.
That's the other factor that we haven't discussed, and that is the habitat conservation plan.
Yep.
That has been in process for more than 20 years. And once we're all through this updated new LRP and any contract changes, we still have to satisfy the resource agencies and get an approval for habitat conservation plans. So it's a very complex, long-running project. Anything else from committee members?
No.
I had one other question. So we had talked about going below the, you know, the 20 to 31 is kind of the buffer, right? So we don't have to jump in and out of the LRP, which eventually there might be no LRP. But so when we get above 31, does that still take the Board of Supervisors' vote to get out of the LRP?
Yes. So even under the new the proposed revised LRRP, the same two triggers are there. You enter at 20,000 and you have a declaration of an emergency by the Board of Supervisors. And when you leave when both are satisfied as well. When you are over this number that we came up with, somewhere around 31,000, and the Board of Supervisors rescinds the declaration of emergency. So the triggers are still there. Essentially. And that is, that's to help us satisfy, some of it is to help satisfy our environmental document.
Thank you.
So that leads to another question. And unfortunately, I missed the last TAC meeting, but one of the questions we had was whether we were going to have an environmental document because the updated unapproved as yet LRRP certainly could be the water shortage contingency plan portion of the urban water management plan of the district, and those by law don't have to have environmental documents.
We will need some kind of environmental document, is what we've determined.
Is some that something kind that county council has ruled on?
That is something that internally our environmental division manager and Mark Hutchinson have determined.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else? Anybody from the audience? Seeing none, we're ready to move on to fourth quarter budget status. Christy Smith.
Good evening. Christy Smith, County Public Works Finance. I'm here tonight to provide you with the fiscal year 17-18 fourth quarter budget status report. This report is through June 30th, 2018. At the end of the fiscal year, expenses totaled 84% of the annual budget, leaving a balance of approximately $895,000. Of that amount, over $700,000 will be carried into fiscal year 18-19 for ongoing efforts and projects. In your packet, there are three graphs reflecting the budget versus the actual expenses for the year. The first graph displays routine O&M. At the end of the fiscal year, expenses were 106% of the budget, resulting in a deficit of approximately $241,000. This is largely due to the water treatment plant staff being relieved of wastewater duties and spending more time on plant maintenance. Other unbudgeted efforts, such as the repair of the standby generator, also contributed to the deficit. The second graph displays non-routine O&M. At the end of the fiscal year, expenses were 40% of the budget. Approximately $454,000 will be carried into fiscal year 18-19 for continued work. This carry-forward amount is comprised mainly of the HCP and pigging project budgets. This category had several unbudgeted efforts this year, such as the network upgrade, the spillway assessment, and the arc flash hazard assessment. And that created a deficit of roughly $97,000. The third graph displays capital outlay. At the end of the fiscal year, expenses were 35% of the budget. Approximately $263,000 will be carried into fiscal year 18-19 to continue projects through to completion. The pH suppression and scaling control project has been completed with a savings of $516,000, roughly. I will be back at the end of the night to further discuss your options regarding the distribution of these savings and possibly using a portion to offset your fiscal year 17-18 billing. All agencies are current on their payments, and the estimated billings for fiscal year 17-18 total $322,628, and they'll be allocated to the agencies and mailed along with the second installment of your fiscal year 18-19 billings that are due January 1st, 2019. This concludes my report. Any questions?
Thank you. Questions?
No.
I had one, and I should know the answer, but we went over on our routine O&M last quarter for 18-19. Did we anticipate that the staffing level is going to be higher?
In 18-19 budget?
In 18-19, yeah.
Yes, we took that into the account when we did the 18-19 budget.
Carried forward.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Anybody else? How about from the audience? Seeing none. Thank you, Christine.
Okay, thanks.
Cloud seeding update. Who's going to do the cloud seeding update?
Jill will be providing that update. Is that correct, or Colt?
I'll do it.
All right.
I nominate Colt.
All right. Chair Daring, members of the advisory committee, Colt Estenwine, Public Works, San Luis Obispo County. I'm here to talk a little bit about the cloud seeding program and why it didn't go to the board and what next steps possibly might be for the cloud seeding program. When the board item came, we did our rounds and we spoke to the different board members and some of the members of the community, and there were a lot of questions that our board presentation and the document just weren't going to answer. And coupled with the fact that item was next to a very contentious planning item, and a lot of the same people that would come and comment on that were already there in the audience, we didn't want to risk a no vote on cloud seeding, being as there were so many questions. So we pulled the item so that we could further clarify the presentation and do a little more education and then come back here and talk about what cloud seeding means to Zone 3, because there's some other information that's out there as well, which may or may not change the advisory committee's position on whether or not they want cloud seeding. So first, the members of the board did want to see more support from those that would benefit from the cloud seeding in the form of something other than just the advisory committee's okay to go ahead and explore it. So they wanted to see some commitment on funding of cloud seeding. And since the city of San Luis Obispo is not interested, and as they are the only subscriber for water from Santa Margarita, that means that the only subscribers of benefit would be the contractors for Zone 3 at Lopez Lake right now, as Monterey County is still working on whatever they're doing with Lake Nacimiento. So those costs then would be borne entirely by the Zone 3 contractors for cloud seeding. And those costs are approximately an initial outlay of about $200,000, because that's your infrastructure investment, and then annual requirements for maintaining the system and lighting it when you need to for the various storms. So what I'm here to ask today is kind of for direction from this committee, is if there is interest in pursuing cloud seeding, we can direct staff to further study what the impacts would be to rates, water rates, et cetera, for doing this, and then determining whether or not you want to go forward with that. And if so, what kind of support we would need from the various contracting agencies to bring forward to the board of supervisors to then educate them and get past those objections that there might be or potential misinformation that's out there about cloud seeding and move forward with some kind of a program. So that's what I have as far as an update. I'm sure you have questions and perhaps some direction. Again,
The request today is just if you want us to further explore it and come back to at the next meeting and present some more information on cloud seeding to determine whether or not we want to go forward. Okay?
So as we had envisioned the cloud seeding costs to be spread quite some time ago, the resulting cost per acre foot was very, very low. So the question would be, how does that affect the resulting cost per acre foot for Zone 3 if we bear all the costs?
So that's something we would bring back to the next board, but the cost-benefit ratio for cloud seeding was very high. So it did pencil out as far as numerically. And that was when they were talking about both Zone 9 and Zone 3 subscribers. So we'd have to, of course, revise the picture for just Zone 3.
As I recall, and you correct me if I'm wrong, I haven't thought about this in quite a while, but I recall the cost to be somewhere in the range of $20 an acre foot at the time for the resulting increase in yield. You think that's the correct number? Am I recalling that?
I couldn't tell you right now off the top of my head.
So what's the $200,000? That's for the cost. What exactly does that cover, the $200,000?
So we studied a land-based launching of the silver iodide via these torches and also via airplane. And so the $200,000 is for the land-based. That's the initial infrastructure to place the land-based torches in their permanent positions and then for the first year, for a certain number of set events, use the silver iodide to see the clouds. How many that there were, I don't know. But again, the number would have to be revised. And also, that was for both Zone 9 and Zone 3 subscribers. So I would expect the costs would be less because we would only build stations that would benefit or what we think would benefit Lopez Lake. Now, the airplane was much more expensive, and there was no ground infrastructure. There was some plane modifications to put the torches and mount them to a plane, but then we would also have to have a pilot on standby and a plane on standby so that whenever there was a front that was useful for cloud seeding, they'd be ready to fly. And so I think that was around $250,000, $270,000, something like that for the airplane version. And so we studied just ground, just plane, a combination of both. The best cost to benefit ratio was to use only the land based equipment.
Okay, thank you for that.
Yeah.
Did we also? I know there was some discussion about teaming with Monterey County if they were going to move forward. Did you guys look at Santa Barbara County, and are they still doing some cloud seeding down there as far as kind of a joint sharing a plane kind of a thing?
So Santa Barbara is still doing cloud seeding. I don't know if we can share a plane there as well. Maybe they have a front there and a front here. It would be hard to seed both, I would suppose,
yeah,
in some cases. We are still talking to Monterey, but we don't know what that's going to entail and the infrastructure that we'd use for a land-based system would be over and above and beyond what we would use for Lopez. It's totally different locations, so there really wouldn't be much of an advantage.
Yeah, but the initial study we didn't really pursue, because I know the scope was pretty limited as far as sharing something with Santa Barbara. That was a little bit outside of what we were trying to do with this initial step.
Yes.
Is that correct? Yeah.
So does the revised vision, for lack of a better term, as it's just Zone 3 rather than Zone 9 and Zone 3, would it be to bring it into this budget so that it basically becomes a Zone 3 public works effort rather than a county effort?
So we would come back to this board and discuss that option if you wanted us to explore that. And the costs, as I said earlier, would be for the Zone 3 subscribers to pay it for. Okay. Yeah.
I guess just from a
The county's part of that. We have one of our zones, you know, as a
right.
subscriber. So.
Okay. Yeah, so there could be a county participation in
Well, that in our CSA, yes.
Right. Okay. So, but if it was to become a Zone 3 effort, so amongst that, what would there be a different approval process at the board from that perspective? So would that address any of the concerns? Because it's obviously it's not a countywide project anymore. It's a zone-specific.
So it's still the same board that sits.
True.
Yeah, so it's still the same five supervisors mm-hmm. that would be voting on this. So it doesn't change that. But I believe that if the zone supported cloud seeding and wanted to see it done and were given the proper direction or support, then I believe that staff could certainly make the case that cloud seeding would benefit this zone.
Well, from my perspective, we need to know the numbers, and we need to know a prospective project makeup and whether we could work with Monterey or Santa Barbara. I seem to recall we worked with Santa Barbara years ago on cloud seeding, and it was at the time thought to be quite successful. So I think we need to know the numbers and come back through TAC, et cetera.
Right, and that would be my suggestion. If there's still interest here at this board based on knowing that the city of San Luis, Zone 9, is out and that you want to go it alone as Zone 3 on cloud seeding, then we will be happy to bring back numbers and do some more education and let you know what that really means. You are correct. We did, a long time ago, long before I was here, try cloud seeding with a plane from Santa Barbara County. Again, I don't know that there was an after-action report saying that it was successful or not successful, but it was attempted. So.
Well, I would agree that, because I think we all agreed when we talked about this, seems like we've talked about it a lot over many months, and I think we were all in agreement that depending on what the cost and what the benefit was, which we thought that it was sort of a good deal for what we thought we were maybe going to have to pay. So I think it's still worth exploring, especially because, in my opinion, we're still in a drought. I just think it's going to get worse before it gets better. So I think we need to know what we're actually dealing with as far as the cost and know more about it. I mean, and then we go back to our agencies and find out, you know, what they want to do as well. Yeah.
I had a question. So are you expecting opposition from the environmental side?
Yes. There will be some opposition with regard to chemtrails.
Okay.
What they believe as chemtrails and the shadow effect of seeding clouds. So there are questions about that. But there's significant data and literature that debunks the idea of chemtrails and the shadow myth. So I think we can get there. But again, the question was, if there's interest, then we'd go forward. Otherwise, it's a lot of work and staff time to pursue this if you're no longer interested as an advisory committee.
Well, if you were to bring it back to us, are you going to be going into those possible environmental concerns that people have so that we have information and data, whether you believe it or not? I know that I haven't really dug into any of that. I've just heard it, so it would be nice to have. Would we get the information then, or would we get the information some other way?
So we have most of that information already.
Okay.
Right, and the draft, well, it's a mitigated negative declaration, not an ER, but we do have an environmental document, and our environmental staff have cleared it. So and there's plenty of evidence from trials in the Sierras where they've been cloud seeding forever, and there's no bioaccumulation, there's no, you know, negative impacts due to cloud seeding. So
if that's the will of the board to come back to us, can we have that attached when it's sent back to us for the next meeting, the MNND, Mitigate Neg Deck?
It's okay.
I mean, it's online, but
it is a very large document.
Oh, it is? Okay. Yeah. All right.
But it is online.
I'll make note.
I can email it to you. Would you like me to email it to the committee members?
No, I'm going to just make note in my calendar when it comes back to just look for that ahead of time.
Maybe we could bring you a flash drive with it on the flash drive or something.
That's okay. I can go online.
Send the link.
Link, yeah.
Brad.
Mm-hmm. Well, did we spend $10,000-$12,000 or so on this initial effort, and or are we going to end up, are you asking, or do you have a budget estimate as far as what it would take budget-wise to kind of, it sounds like the majority of the board, or at least the ones that have spoken, have said, and I'm with that as well, that I'm interested in seeing the numbers if we go it alone. But do we need more budget that we need to worry about at this point from the Zone 3 agencies to support that? Or
so I'll leave that to Jill to let me know what she thinks the effort's going to be.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's going to be a lot of effort because most of the work's already been done. We just have to adjust the numbers for one area vice another.
Yeah.
So you know, we did calculations for the two zoning sites that we were going to put the infrastructure, and I really don't think it's going to be a lot of effort.
Scale it down. Yeah.
But we'll have to go through and redo the numbers.
What? You spent $10,000 so far, and that was on the initial cloud seeding feasibility. You know, what we're really talking about is kind of tailoring like a staff report for you that has all the information and what you need, and we have that. It's just the time to do that and make it readable and understandable and you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know,
so maybe 10 to 20 hours or so, something like that. Yeah.
Okay, I could support looking at the numbers then.
Great.
This is an update item, right? There's no action?
Yeah, I'm sensing consensus, though, that
yeah.
we need to know.
So yeah, we're just, it's not an action item, but if I feel like there's consensus, we'll go ahead and pursue on your behalf.
Yeah, there's no need for a roll call vote unless you just wanted to record consensus.
I think you're hearing the direction. So,
okay. If there's nothing further, then
okay.
Thank you.
Capital projects update. Jill's going to do that.
Jill Ogren.
I actually have an updated list here for you. So let me, I'll give it to Andrea, and she can pass this out. So now that you all have it in front of you, I requested that it be changed somewhat from the one that in your packet because sometimes these items, they don't make a lot of movement or change from meeting to meeting. So I had them, if there's no change, meaning you know nothing, there's no update or status to provide, we've now put no change at the end of the item. So I would like to just focus on those items where we have something to report out. So I've talked to you already about the spillway assessment, and you can see it there. It's what I explained earlier. Our Lopez Dam, Terminal Dam classification, there's no change on that front at this time. As far as the structural assessment of the Terminal Reservoir Dam goes, our preliminary findings suggested that we really needed to do some additional geotechnical investigation in order to really understand the condition of the terminal reservoir. So we're in the process of getting some quotes for that additional, basically it would be some borings, something to help us understand what the soil is below the terminal reservoir. So that's in progress. The fault zone assessment, dam left abutment. We did get our preliminary report back from our consultant on that, and there is some remediation work that needs to be done, but we were able to determine that what we were seeing there would not affect the stability of the dam. So that was good news. It doesn't mean that it doesn't need to be remediated in some way, and we're in the process of determining what that looks like. So we'll be bringing that back at some point. I'll give you an update. Our equipment storage location was, we're going to put that on hold until we find out about the terminal reservoir dam investigation because they would kind of conflict where we might put the storage thing. Where we might put our storage, our equipment storage, would be down near the terminal reservoir at the bottom. So we need to find out if the terminal reservoir is stable, and then we would decide whether we would put something at the base of it. We are in the process of doing some Lopez water treatment plant safety upgrades in our dissolved air flotation building. That's the DAF. No progress on domestic fire tank at this point. We're same position as we were on the rebuilding the membrane feed pumps, partly because we don't want to do that while we're in high demand. We don't want to take a pump offline while we're still in the middle of summer and quite a bit of demand for water. On the back side of your update there, it says upcoming projects. These are all things that were budgeted for in 18-19, and they're all on the list to be. They'll soon end up on the front side of your sheet, but at the moment they're just scheduled. And under completed projects, we completed the sludge bed clean-out repair. That was the latest thing. The rest of the items there were on your list in July. I will point out one thing, because this has come up a couple times, and Jim knows about this, as related to TAC, and it may be more applicable right now to be thinking about it, is that there is a pipeline. We call it the bypass pipeline, and it was a pipeline that was meant to avoid the terminal reservoir. So should something happen to the terminal reservoir, we could still deliver water. It would be raw water, but we could, you know, replumb it and somehow get it back into the plant. So it was put there as a when the whole project was built a long time ago. We've never needed to use it. But over the last drought, we actually started looking at it as a possible conduit for taking additional state water. So in order to do that, because we had never used it and the pipe was 40, 50 years old, we were trying to determine its condition. We were able to simply do a little bit of a pressure test. It was static, but we really don't. We need to do further investigation. So it's on the list, but TAC has kind of indicated that if we thought that the testing or the assessment of that line was going to cost more than $20,000, they did not want to do it at this time. So we're investigating ways. We have more technology. Change it, you know, comes out all the time. Now there's a possibility of us being able to send a video camera down there that we didn't think was available a year ago, but now it looks like maybe we can do that. So we're investigating that, and that's why that's down there. Any questions?
I have a question, Jill. On the taste and odor, the alternative study for water treatment.
Yes.
What spurred that on, from complaints from or questions from citizens?
It's something we've known about for a long time, and we've had studies, and it's a seasonal thing that happens where the algae blooms occur certain times of the year, and we do our best. We add chemicals or copper sulfate to the terminal reservoir to help get rid of the algae blooms and that kind of thing. But more recently, we did have a complaint from San Miguelito, who is at the very downstream end. They're near CSA 12, or they're near Avila Beach, and they take their water. And he brought up that their water was, you know, when it is bad, it's really bad. And so he was asking that we be more proactive in addressing the algae blooms or whatever. So that just stirred, kind of, we had a big conversation with him and at TAC about this, and started thinking about other alternatives. So there are a few more things that we're looking into that we might be able to do. Right now, we're getting some cost estimates together for some of these options, and we'll be bringing it back to TAC in possibly October, November.
Okay, thank you for that.
Yeah, well, more on that to come.
Actually, Kristen, as Shane will tell you, Roy Grandy suffers from taste and odor episodes pretty significantly on occasion.
I know. I hear about it from people that I know. I don't
I don't see, I mean, maybe once in a while, not the taste as much. I mean, I have RO, so it's filtered that way, so maybe that helps. Mm-hmm. But I do hear about it, and, you know, they'll complain on Facebook, and then they'll, everybody will get on board and complain. But then all it dies, and then it comes back, so mm-hmm. it's seasonal, so that makes sense. Okay. Thank you.
Jill, that does raise a question, though. Mm-hmm. At TAC some time ago, we had talked about the fact that years ago we looked into legislation to be able to avoid using the terminal reservoir because, mm-hmm. among many things, the terminal reservoir causes or is a party to these taste and odor episodes, and that's a maintenance issue and there's all sorts of reasons that it would be nice to be able to not operate the terminal reservoir. And the last time we looked into that, we were on the old plant, the old sand anthracite filtration plant. We're now on the new membrane system. So was there ever any direction from TAC to look into that possibility now that we have the new plant and what would be involved?
Of the yes, you did bring that up at one of the TAC meetings, and I did. We did kind of discuss it internally. Other than knowing that it would take legislation to be able to do that, it was a little bit of a deterrent, to be honest. But I couldn't quantify the cost or time to do something like that. It is one of the alternatives, so we'll present that. I don't know where Dave Spiegel has gotten exactly on that. Whether we were going to call one of the other, mm-hmm. you know, agencies. There's a handful that, or maybe two or three actually, I think that were able to pass legislation where they were able to, get legislation passed so that they didn't need a terminal reservoir. We would probably need to call them and find out, like, to get a sense of how hard was it, did it, you know, was it worth it, those kinds of things. And then keeping that in mind with the other alternatives that we're going to come forward with.
So that's going to be on a future TAC agenda?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. Anybody else have questions? Seeing none. Anybody from the audience? Seeing none. Okay, we're ready to move on to item 7, strategy.
And Christy Smith will present this item.
Hello, Christy Smith, County Public Works Finance. As a quick reminder, Zone 3's reserves are comprised of three items. Your contractor-funded reserves. These are financed and used by the agencies to stabilize billings in years with higher capital needs. Your district-funded operating reserves. These are held at approximately 50% of routine O&M. And your district-funded designated reserves. And these are set aside for significant maintenance and capital costs. And that's what we're here to talk about tonight. So as I mentioned earlier in the fourth quarter budget status report, there is $516,135 remaining after the completion of the pH suppression project. Back in May, your committee indicated it would like to use these savings to replace reserves and offset the fiscal year 17-18 final bill. In your packet, I've shown you two options. Both options assume that you want to replace the entire $48,000 to contractor reserves that was reallocated for the project. Option number one shows the replacement of $280,500 to the district-funded designated reserves, and then will partially offset the fiscal year 17-18 final bill. This results in the agencies receiving a final bill of $135,000 total, and the chart in the packet shows the amounts that each agency would be responsible for. Option number two shows the replacement of $145,500 to the district-funded designated reserves and then would fully offset your fiscal year 17-18 final bill. And this would result in the agencies receiving no final bill. So these two options were discussed with the TAC at their September 12th meeting last week, and they recommended going with option number two. Your committee can support either option, or you can decide to distribute your savings in any way you see fit. So the proposed reserve replacements do not need further action by the Board of Supervisors since they were included in the fiscal year 18-19 proposed budget that's already been approved by the Board in June. If option number one is chosen, the total available balance in the district-funded designated reserves would be $791,000 and would be earmarked as shown on the next-to-last page in your packet. If you choose option two, the total available balance in the district-funded designated reserves would be $656,000, and it would be earmarked as shown on the last page. So that concludes my report. Any questions? Lots to think about.
If there is no further discussion, just remind you that TAC was in favor of option two.
I'm actually, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, in looking at it, I would actually be more in favor of option one myself. And I think the reason for that is based on some of the information that was brought to light this evening by Jill in with the, we'll call it the unknowns of the DSOD review of the dam, the possibility of additional funding if we decide to potentially go cloud seeding alone, and I, while it's nice to have no true up bill, I think there's longer term opportunities for funding using these reserves than not than just having no additional last bill. Obviously, it's not a large amount of money overall, but having those reserves available, I think, is prudent for some of the unknowns that we have coming down the pipe. So I'd actually be more in favor of option one. I can see where the TAC would be in favor of option two, but.
I think I really have to go back to my board with option two.
Jim, do you know why the TAC, for the unless just the obvious reason, why they were in favor of option number two?
I think there was concern that this would be a surprise billing. It's not in the in some agencies' budget. Most agencies would pay for this out of their water fund. So if your water fund is short, it could be an unpleasant surprise.
I think the other thing, Jim, that was talked about, and I'll look to Jill to correct me if I'm wrong, or Christy too, was the other amounts for the Santa Maria Groundwater Basin model and AG Creek Watershed model. Some of those funds are available, but whether or not those are actually going to get spent was not clear, and so that money might roll into the reserves.
I think that's what Jill mentioned at the last TAC meeting, was that even though that chart shows a remainder left for those items, that weren't we thinking we might not be getting, not be needing anymore?
Right.
Isn't that what you'd mentioned?
The reason that it looks like there's a balance available is because when we initially made this, we didn't know how much we were going to be contributing. As it turned out, we only needed to contribute the 117 and the 99. So both the 132 and 89 will roll into the public safety related water quality. That's why it's under available. We're not committed to spending that at this point on either project. We've done our commitment, so that money could be rolled into the public safety. That makes sense?
And so, but it's in there, I guess, is the other point that maybe I'm missing. It's in the 656 and/or the
791.
Yeah, 19.
And you also have the option. I just assumed that you guys would want to replace your contractor reserves in full, that $48,000. That's up to you if you want to do that or use part of that to offset this final bill. It's up to you how you guys want to distribute your savings, which replacement, you know, which reserves you want to replace and how much of a bill you want to get. I just tried to present two options.
But I do think being at the TAC, that the main concern from most of the agencies, or at least several, and in fact, Grover, was concerned about the health and well-being of the water fund and whether, you know, and we went back and forth. There wasn't a clear winner here, but.
Okay. Yeah, and I think we definitely like to stay within our budget, So
we would be staying within our budget as well. We that's I mean it's if it's sorry and the impact onto the water fund we would obviously we would if it's if and I have to go back to our budget cycle and determine if we were anticipating a zero balance budget or zero last billing, but it's just a comment on my part to I'd rather use the reserves at this point with some nominal offset if we needed to at the mid-year for us, but perhaps with what Ms. Gibson was saying and what Brad's saying is that is there any urgency to do this evening? If we each
be preferable, I'm kind of firming things up for the 18-19 budget as we speak. So I would like to know how much of reserves you would like to replace, and I will be preparing your 17-18 final bill pretty soon. I need to mail it around November 1st, so it gives me about a month. So but we don't meet again until after that period. So
then we could have a special meeting, a brief one.
Andrea, how do special meetings work?
I believe I need to give 72 hours notice to do a special meeting, but we haven't done one of those in the time that I've served as your secretary, so I would have to confirm that.
Does everybody need to be present?
We have to have a quorum. We have to have four, just like we normally would. But as Christy mentioned, this doesn't require action by the Board of Supervisors, so you don't need a formal vote. May I suggest that this is something that, you know, we could even receive email correspondence?
Sure.
About
that was my question when I'm sitting.
Yeah, if you need to think about it.
I'd like to go back and talk to I didn't get a chance to talk to Director Robeson because I got the packet late, whatever happened, because it went to someone else. And so I'd like to be able to talk to him about this specifically and the reasoning behind it, because I kind of side with Jeff, but then I really want to respect the TAC and what the decision they made and find out why they made it. So if we could do it by email, that would be great. I didn't know we could.
Yeah, it doesn't require a formal vote. If you wanted to take action tonight and you wanted just to do a vote so you could do show of hands, you know, who's in favor of whatever option, you could do that. But it's not something that requires a formal vote. We're not making a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors. As Christy said, the Board of Supervisors has already approved the budget for Zone 3. It's just how you want to spend those reserves now.
So could we take in an email and then respond back, and then that's what the majority we'd go with that?
That's
sure.
You can certainly do that. Perhaps Christy could give you a time frame.
Yeah.
That we receive that
next week, the end of next week.
Sure.
Too soon?
Oh no,
okay,
I don't think so.
That would fit into my plan. Okay.
So you'll email us something out?
We can. Yes, I can do that. I'll email everyone here tonight, and then you can respond.
You have, you have the emails for the finance directors also, right?
I do. Yeah.
Would it be appropriate to send it to them?
Sure.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And not to get too off track, but while we're on the subject of emails, it seems like there has been a little bit of an issue with committee members from the TAC and from the advisory committee receiving packets. If you haven't already, I would like to suggest that you check your spam folders. It could be an issue with agency's firewall. Jill and I are working on it from the county side, and we took a look at the email distribution list, and you were all on that list.
Mm-hmm.
I apologize if you did not receive the agendas, but we are working on that. And if you could look in your spam folders, that would be appreciated. Thank you.
Is there any way we could do a trial, raise our hands, just to see what the general mood of the board or not?
I think there's a consensus to hold off and do some consulting.
Okay.
And if you had that, I would abstain at present.
And I do agree with including the finance directors on there, but just with the understanding that they don't have a vote on this board. So they obviously well respected and can provide good information, but they don't count in the final tally. Yeah,
that's a good point.
majority. If a majority of you want it, option one, that's what we go with.
Is that how you guys want to do it? Majority rules?
Yeah.
Okay. I do. I need to know which way to go. And like I said, you don't have to pick either of the options. I just tried to present you both ends of the spectrum. So
from that perspective, though, I think if we are going to vote online, I think I would be supportive of saying either option one or option
right,
two.
Right, not.
Okay.
Not
you don't want to do any other option.
No.
Okay, that keeps it simple. I like that.
We're not going to reinvent the third option.
Okay.
Or I'm not, at least.
All right.
Okay, we got good direction on that?
Option one, option two. Okay. I love it. Thank you.
Thanks.
Was
okay.
that it? Anything
Thank
else?
You. Any further questions for Christy?
Okay.
Seeing
Thank
none,
you.
I guess. Thank you, Christy.
Thank you, Christy.
So, action items. We don't have any, unless somebody has one right on, not on the agenda.
Yep. No action items.
What do we need to do with future agenda items?
Those are the agenda items that have been here for some time, and as we... we talked about cloud seeding tonight. We talked about the LRRP. The Lopez Lake Safefield is left on there until the modeling is complete. It's just something we leave on so we don't forget about it. But these items can, we can change them up. We can take them off. And if you have more to add, I can certainly add them too.
All right. Anybody have a comment?
No.
Want to change them? Delete any? No. All right.
How about Jill or anybody in the audience? Do you have agenda items for us?
No, those look good. I don't know about Lopez Lake
Safefield. Right, I feel like we discussed that, and then we kind of put it to bed, and I got clarification from my counsel, gave them back the clarification. Unless there's something we forgot, I don't feel that needs to be on there any longer.
Or it gets wrapped into the little reservoir response plan and the amendments to the contract.
It seems like that is what is occurring.
Yeah,
okay.
I think you could take off Lopez Lake Safefield, but we might want to put contract changes on there.
Mm-hmm.
It is kind of related to the LRP, but it may be a completely separate issue, or that we should keep track of.
Okay.
I'm seeing consensus on that. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Everybody's nodding their heads. So it looks like we got that changed
by
consensus.
The change. I will note that at our meeting in November, I'll come back with a schedule for next year's meetings. So that will be something that I will ask you to approve.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Committee member comments. Who has any comments? Jeff.
I just have two comments, and they're kind of sad comments, actually, in the fact that aforementioned finance director that I was mentioning in Grover Beach is actually about to retire at the end of the year.
Oh,
so, Gail is going to retire. So, and an even quicker note, so our city clerk, Donna McMahon, is going to be retiring in early November. So we're going to be recruiting some high-level staff in Grover Beach here shortly.
No comment. Anybody else?
With the OCSD, next month, we're going to have three new board members. So we kind of have a learning curve, so bear with us.
Okay. Brad? Marcia?
Yep. No? And if there was a learning curve this evening, it was very smooth for you. Yeah. Nicely done.
Yes.
So are we ready to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
All right. Looks like we're adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.